At this point, we get a total lens that they are all together. And then you may wonder, the state is critical state at this point, maybe unstable. We will turn on a little bit of interaction. This total lens of the state splits, and you can get a totally different behavior. So that is a concern. So actually, that's what happens. We'll have a non-zero JXY. It's two in the DRC splits. And then the behavior in this neighborhood totally changed in a qualitative way. So how do I understand that? Again, let's consider a single spin flip. So again, suppose we have a state where everywhere is m equal to 0, but only one place equal to 1. This is a wonderful skin flip. Let me ask, what happens to this spin if a jxy not equal to 0? If a jx not equal to 0, this is spin, this single set can pop. Okay. So therefore, if I can hop, it will form energy back. Just like nearest neighbor hopping, we started with before. The single particle can hop around, it will form energy back. So what is energy back? The energy band is actually this. Well, apparently I'm a little bit too quick here, so let me try to explain this response. Again, let's assume this jxy equal to 0, then using this response. If j equal to 0, that means we get a flat back in the case of this. We get a flat back. And this is expected. Because in the flat band picture, we get a lot of states. They all have the same energy. How many states do we get? We get n states. So we have n states. N state with this energy, Jz minus mu. And this is exact result of this picture. Because a single flip spin has this energy, Jz minus mu. But the position spin can be anywhere. Here. We have n choice of one spin flip. So we have n state with this energy, Jz minus mu. But in this picture, what happens is that we recombine this n real space state into n plane wave space. Because they all have same energy, so any linear combination of those states have same energy. So that's why I get flat band. Okay. So flat band means no hopping. And the particle everywhere is the eigen states. But when you have a hopping, things become different. When you have a hopping, a single spin flip at a definite place is no longer eigenstates. Well, a certain kind of linear combination of this plane wave linear combination gives us eigenstate in the presence of hopping. So therefore, we should go to k space. And then the energy dispersion relation is split. And that's why I can say it's 2 to n began to get a split. 2 to n began to get a split. And in such a way that because of the hopping, no, originally you have the DNA, but when you have a hopping, it just splits. So now the question became, how does splitting affect this transition? In the presence of splitting, do we still have this first order transition? So that's the question. what's happened to the transition? Okay. So let's consider this situation. That is a we start from mu to zero and make mu bigger and bigger and bigger. In the jxy equals zero length, we get this flat band. As a dispersion of single spin flip, we get this flat band. And when we increase mu, this flat band can lower and lower and lower, eventually go across. So therefore, it's very strange that every point of time across zero energy at the same time. And this, so therefore, so once you get below it, you can put the boson here and here, here, they all have a negative energy. So you want to put the boson in this back, from fill this back. Then essentially, you go from the space where, you know, when this happens, you directly have a transition from n equal to zero space to n and I equal to zero, to n I equal to one space. They happen simultaneously on every side. So this is this first order free transition. But however, if jxy not equal to zero, then this picture is changed. Then we have this dispersive band. When you're changing the mu, this band can lower. Then attaching this at one point. And then we can go further down, but only partially. So there are several things. Is that you know, all these small part of that go below the zero. So in this case, you don't expect suddenly this band is suddenly totally filled. So you don't expect you'll have a suddenly on every side n equals zero altering n equals one. Because when just past it, only a few n equals one available. There's only a few amplitude one. So amplitude one is still a dilute gas. Okay. So in that case, so we expect to say that mi equal to zero space turns into the mixing of mi equal to zero and the one. You know, some side is zero, some side is one. And then we'll further, maybe this one, the whole band go below. Then you go further, and I hope you will. So there's an intermediate regime where mi only partially equal to 1. That is, and this picture suggests that this phase transition is split into two. You know, when you increase, when this the lowest part and then touch zero, the first go to this position. And then in the middle, some side mi equal zero, some side mi equal one, so that's mixed phase. Then we'll go further, you get another phase transition. After that, the mi all equal to one. So this is a mi all equal to one. This is mi equal to zero. And in the middle, partial phase. So now the question is, so we can see that this picture suggests that the single first order phase transition split into two phase transition, and there's new phase in the middle. So what is this new phase? Anybody want to make a guess? guess. No clue.
But is it stable, this new phase?
Yeah, it's a rising phase, and everything is stable. So there's another, somehow, so the sixth one, you need to get some picture. What is this phase? What is the picture of the phase? You can see, you get a pretty clear picture of this phase, where there's a LZ, which is MI, all equal to zero. You also get a pretty clear picture what is this phase, where MI all equal to one. That's just two very simple states. Here, what kind of picture do we want to form for the state in the middle? That's a question. So the state in the middle is a kind of a mixed partial. So some place MI to zero, some place MI to one. And somehow they're mixed. You know, there's some superposition involved here because we can see. So only a part of this band is in negative energy. So therefore, those bosons may only occupy those states. So it's kind of like plane wave states. And the plane waves that only have a small momentum, they only evolve in small momentum of wave states.
Sorry, why are they plane wave states?
When I say plane wave state, it really means that so here we are describing the band structure. Mm-hmm. So every state here are plane wave states. Then I'll try to say that just after transition, only certain part of the band, in a certain small range of a wave vector, have negative energy. So that means if this is a flip spin, they form a plane wave state. But they only form a particular plane wave state where the momentum is in this window. Because momentum here will be negative with positive energy, they don't want to condense there. And this is kind of like a compensation. Because we have, so here the picture is that there are many ways to look at this state. One is that there's a flip spin. Form of plane wave state means suppose let's denote it's a single spin flip state as I, means only at the I side you get spin flip, every other side no spin flip. The plane wave state will be this e to the ik i, so let's use the vector, you sum over all I. So this is superposition of this the state where the spin flip have a definite position give us a plane wave space. Then this picture, we say that the plane wave state which the spin one will have actually is a plane state where k is nearly zero. So we have a lot of flip spin, they all have a k near zero, that sounds like awesome. And indeed, this one can be viewed as a boson in that case. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at this state is that this state in this language, in the real space language. You know, some part of the spin is mi to zero, some part equal to one. But however, there's many configurations where it's a one can be digital. So one can be here, or one can be here and here, you know. You know where one can be, so it can be anywhere. And each distribution of these ones have some amplitude. Maybe the amplitude all equal to one or very close to each other. So you get a superposition for all different configurations of ones. And that sounds like a superfluid of boson condensation. Okay. So that rule of thumb that if you don't know, it's a superconductor. And so here is a m to zero state is insulator. Here's insulator. Here's something we don't know. Let's talk about that supercooling. It is a supercooling state. Actually, there's already a hint here. Look at the excitation. You can see the excitation before transition, we have an energy gap. The way of occurring transition is such an energy gap, getting smaller and smaller, then becoming this. That's remind us this before transition, there was a gap. The after transition, this gap closed and touching zero. And after transition, we just leave it. Okay, so all this, that's it. So therefore, so now we can draw this diagram. So this is a J, Z. This is an image over J, Z. And this is a JX, Y over J. When at Gx equals 0, we get a phase transition here. When mu over Gz equal to 1, 3, 5, 7, etc., we get a phase transition. And the state here is the mi equal to 0 state, this is the mi equal to 1 state, etc. But however, when Gzxy is slightly not equal to 0, we say that this phase transition split into two phase transitions. In the middle, we get a mixed phase. This mi can be 1 or 0. And we get a superposition of 1 and 0. And this actually is a superfluid state. So I hope our discussion of this interacting boson gave us an intuition so we can make a guess what the state. And similarly, for this state, we can mix between mi to z1 and mi to 2. And so that's also gave us stability, similar stability in this space. And here is the stability. And then certainly, when changing this, when this jxy is bigger, this bandwidth became bigger. So therefore, the window of superfluidity is getting bigger. So therefore, we get these transition lines here, like this. Split up. Sometimes when GXY is too big, this line will join. And what happens is that outside this, we get a superfluid. Here, we get so-called multi-fluid. All the middle is multi-fluid. So that's kind of a picture. So therefore, if you took the two parameters, jxy and mu, and we get this kind of thing. There's a bubble of more insulator in both.
So can we view these phase transitions as symmetry breaking of the symmetry having all the bosons on the same state?
Exactly, yes. And the language that is right here, symmetry breaking is not obvious. But later, we'll do a more quantitative study of this phase transition. It turns out that this phase transition is now again, it's analog to this. That is, when it's an energy gap close, you get a boson condensation. This we know is a signature breaking transition. And the phase transition here is actually also a signature breaking transition. And because when using this, we can, so you know, without any calculation, just using the intuition, we can develop the right boson gas. You say, here we get a linear expression in the superfluid phase. And then we have a transition from a gap phase to a linear expression relation. So this transition should be something like this. With gap, when gap touch 0, we get quadratic expression relation, and then you get linear expression. It turns out that this picture is almost correct, except at this very thing. It turns out that along these lines, indeed, at the transition point, we've got a Quebec constraint relation. But at a very tip, we've got a linear constraint relation at translation. So actually, it's a pretty interesting story. So in the next, we'll develop a more quantitative approach to study this phase and the phase transition and the dynamics of a low-lying excitation. Really try to understand whether generically, insulator to superfluid transition, the critical point is right over there, quadratic relation, but sometimes we can have a linear discrepancy. And this, okay, yeah. So any question here? Okay, so next we'll develop some formalism to handle that. And the formalism we are going to use is we are going to use computer state formalism. So actually, we can also use the equation of motion formalism. Let me just make a remark. The formalism we use for the implying boson, we use this classical variable xk and tk. So actually, the formalism we use here actually is an equation motion formalism. Those x and tk, xk and tk can be viewed as the average of x operator and the t operator. Then we study the equation motion of those average of x operator and t operator. So basically, that is the formula we use, although we didn't emphasize that. But actually, the formula we use in the implying boson gas is this equation motion formula. But however, so here, to study the rotor model, we'll use another method, this coherent state approach. So the coherent state approach, we start with, let me remind you of that, so what is coherent state? The coherent state approach basically is like a partial approach. We start with some kind of original states. We try to obtain the ground state of this problem. And then later, we view the original parameter as a dynamical variable, a positive dynamical variable, and derive some kind of equation motion for those original parameter. And then we can get the dynamics of the original approach. So this is we call it coherent state approach. So first, let's try to get this original approach. So in the original approach, we have this the following version. So this is the variational wave function. So there are several features. Since we have studied this phase transition, you can see in this phase transition, they may involve mi equal to 0 or mi equal to 1. We don't need to worry about other things. We don't need to worry about mi equal to 2. So in principle, we can construct our variational states just using mi equal to 1 and mi equal to 0. But for the reason which is not obvious here, we just make our life harder by including one more state. Why not? It only improve our approximation. But actually, including this is going to be very important to understand some feature I described. So therefore, we just truncate our Hilbert space into this three state per set, 0 plus 1 minus 1. And then consider a variational space in these three state subspace, and then try to construct the boundary wave function. So this is a And then this z1, z2, z0 basically gets a variational parameter. And they can be side dependent. The original set can be different variational parameters. So we have a lot of variational parameters. And in a spin language, actually, there's a multi-terminal when you look at spin language. Because this m in the 0 plus 1 minus 1 can be viewed as spin 1 space. Then this superposition simply means that spin 1 points in a certain direction. And of course, in different z, the spin point just points in a different direction. So in the spin language, this may be anticipated. Maybe it's easier to look at. And another thing I want to make common is that this state is so-called direct product states. They are direct product states. It means this manifold state is constructed direct product of state on each side. Okay. The direct product states play a very important role in transnational physics. Actually, in so-called mean field theory approach, people basically doing something like that. They construct some direct product space. Using this direct product space, trying to approximate a ground state wave function. And this coefficient in this direct product space actually plays a role of other parameters, as we will see in this example. So the direct product space is very simple. And also very powerful. But on the other hand, it's really limit our scope of the study. Because for some reason, we'll never do mean field theory. Actually, if you learn a lot of kinetic matter, you'll see kinetic matter physics is only the mean field theory, maybe. But actually, there's a lot of mean field theory. So almost every mean field theory, people basically implicitly make some assumption. And this has some kind of negative consequences. You know, we think our world is mean field theory, and mean field theory is the product states. Where we only study a certain subclass of a phase. And when you learn quantum information, you get a totally different picture. The direct paths are trivial, nobody wants to think about that. People always think about entangled states. So this really means the following. You know, maybe for some hypothesis like this, the ones that are highly entangled, they're using this direct path answers. Will be totally misleading. You'll miss a lot of physics. So certainly this water model will, for this particular model, this direct product state answer turn out to be okay. But you have to keep in mind, for some other interaction system, the ground state may be highly entangled. Then we have to use a very different approach to study that model. And those models will be those highly entangled states actually correspond to so-called topological order, the one of a current study, frontier study. And after we discuss the local model, we are studying another local model that modifies this Hamiltonian a little bit. We will see that the modified Hamiltonian can have an entirely entangled state, one state, and that will have very different behavior. But for this particular case, we have just had direct product states. Okay. And once we have direct product states like this, and that's it. The rest of the story will be kinematics. We just follow the rules. But first, we take the average energy in terms of those variational parameters. The minimize average energy to find the ground states. But this procedure can be understood in a thorough way. You know, by changing these z's, by changing those z's, you just changing the direction of z's. So this original calculation, we find some kind of spin configuration, how spin gets arranged, so that can minimize this energy. Okay, and we already see something like that, because this, in the spin language, L is like SD. This L plus L minus is like S plus S minus. And this term in the spin language became SXSSIJ plus SYSYIJ. So therefore, in the spin language, we've already seen that if J is very large, the spin wants to point in the Z direction. maybe up, down, up and down, and that alternating way. So in the d direction. Okay. However, if if j is very large, this spin 1 must be 1, sorry. Then the LZ just wants to be everything 0. So spin this particular space. But however, if j xy is very large, the spin wants to point in the xy direction. And this is a plane. So they have this planar configuration. So that is the that's one thing. Then the extent state will be very simple. Then we treat those z's as this our coherence parameters. Then calculate the Lagrangian for this coherence parameter and some dynamics of those classicals. Build this as classical coherence parameter. The Lagrangian can push a motion, then you get the calculated distinctions. So in the following, we'll just implement this. So first, let's make one simplification. Z0i actually equal to 1 minus di, so z1i transpose over minus di z2i. Because the phase of the state is not important. So we always choose a phase such that z0 is a positive, is always positive. It's real and positive, we just choose a phase. And also, these three coherent parameters satisfy the normalization condition, that is zai epsilon squared, when sum over a equals to 0, 1, 2, and 2, 1, so normalized. So therefore, if we know z0 is positive and real, then we have this relation. So therefore, only z1, z2 are independent. z0 is not independent. Basically, that's what I'm saying. Okay, then the next calculation will be it's a straightforward but very tedious. Actually, not very tedious. I think it's very tedious to write down the black hole. And so when we actually do the calculation, we see this the Hamiltonian. This average of energy is a function of Zi, Z1i, Z1i, and Z2i. And they are equal to. So the average component is we have this state. Using this state, we have the average of energy. And the average energy is a JZ. Let me just write it down. Z1i squared plus Z2i squared plus another term is minus another term. And that's Z1i plus minus Z2i squared. Then we have very complicated term, yes, but you can see the following. First, this is a z1i is amplitude for mi to 1. Okay, so therefore the z1i squared is a probability for mi to 1, and z1i squared is a probability for mi to minus 1. But for the J term, the both plus 1 and minus 1 have a convolution of 1, because the L is equal to 1. So therefore, they both contribute to the, they both contribute. And, but our mi to 0 term have no energy. So therefore, the V0 don't appear here. So this is the mi to 1 term, this is mi to minus 1 term. And for the counterpotential, we have still have similar term to structure, except that mi to minus 1 term would have a negative conjugation. Because for the counterpotential, it's a linear in L. So the average energy has this case. Okay. Then for the JXY term, on the I side, we have this L plus. What L plus do? We have a two states like this, you know. So two states like this, so let's just write this down. So there's like a Z1, Z0, Z2. It's conjugated is a Z1 star, Z0 star, and Z2 star. So we consider LZ term do not change the M. So only we get this kind of a coupling. We get the J1 square of J2, or Z1 square of J2 square. But when you have a L plus really degrades the function. So therefore the L plus, you know, when L plus acts on this space, it brings this M to 0 state into M to 1. So JZ0 and this will kind of start to couple. And this will kind of start to couple. This is an L plus. And so that's why we have this. So for L plus, we have a Z1 star times Z0. So that's why we have a Z1 star times Z0. And we have a Z0 star times Z2. So couple. So this is lambda cube coming from the average. So this is really coming from the average of L plus I. And similarly, this term coming from the average of L minus J. So that's the coupling for the minus. The coupling will be L minus J will be like this. These two coefficients get used. So you get as a product. Okay. So then we get that. And what? So after we get this variable energy, the next we just simply find the minimum. And we have to plug in this D0i equal to square root of 1 minus D1i square minus D2i square. We need to plug this D0 into here and minimize it. It looks like a horrible problem. But we can do it in the following. And so we make let's make two approximations. One approximation is the following. JXY is greater than 0. Okay. The JXY greater than 0 is a they prefer the spin of a line. They prefer spin to be a line. The intuition will be from here. This L plus L minus term. It's like this term. It's a theta I theta j term. If a jxy is a positive, then here we have a negative sign. So let's prefer the cosine theta to be 1. So let's prefer theta I equal theta j. So they prefer a uniform state. So this state, if at j equal to 0, it prefers uniform state. That means jai equal to jaj. They prefer the uniform states. GX line is connective, then it provides eigen states, you know, in the theta I that is given by pi. It's an undefined pi. That's one thing. And the second is that we only consider the situation near this transition. So that means predominantly the z 0 equal to 1. Because the right up transition, you know, in this space, the z 0 equal to 1, z 1 equal to 0. But then we just have a transition, we don't have one transition, we believe z 1, z 2 are small. So therefore, we consider the limit where is z 1, a, z 2, a, they are small, much less than 1. So we consider this. So once we consider this two limit, then this can be simplified. The first implication is that we can drop the I because they are uniform, so we can drop I here, they're all the same. Okay. The second, we just plug this into here, we expand into the quadratic order of z1 and z2. We just expand the quadratic order of z1 and z2. And this gives us the following. This Hamiltonian over the total number sum is equal to v1 star v2 times this 2 by 2 matrix jz minus 4 jx1 minus mu and minus 4 jx1 minus 4. So this is what we get. Then pass a term which is order z1 to the fourth power and z2 to the fourth power. So the quadratic term, because quadratic term I didn't write down, actually which is important, but let me just write down this quadratic term first. The calculation is very straightforward, just tedious. You know, after you drop the I, then this term can be combined. Then you can plug this into here. That's because the mathematics have expanded that into quadratic order. So you get it. And the quadratic order, you can write it in a quadratic form. You put this quadratic form. So z1, z2 star, z1 star, z2, then you have this 2 by 2 matrix. To display the quadratic order, how this Hamiltonian depends on v1 and v2. Okay, and so this is a kind of a straightforward calculation, but what you get is phase transition I. Yeah, from this we get phase transition I. So how? Basically, it's the following. If this 2 by 2 matrix is a positive definite, this is very easy. This Hamiltonian is minimized when z equals to 0. Okay. But however, if this 2 by 2 matrix has a negative eigenvalue, it has negative eigenvalues, then in the direction of negative eigenvalue, the z1 and z2 want to be increased so that the energy will be lowered. Then you want to say, well, then this negative eigenvalue will be unbound, energy will be unbound from below. But that's not quite true because we have this quantity term, which is always positive. So when this term has a negative eigenvalue, indeed at the quantitative level, the sum combination of z1 and z2 want to become big. But when it becomes too big, this quadratic term will take over. And then the minimize between these two would tell us what is a minimum energy. But from this, it's very clear that The instability happens when the two positive eigenvalues became zero and became negative, one of them became zero and negative. You know, at the beginning, the eigenvalue is so both positive, then z equals zero is state. Then, when one of the eigenvalues became zero and negative, that's when you have a phase transition. So therefore, to see where is the phase transition, we just find when these two eigen matrices have a zero determinant. And the condition for the zero determinant actually gave us the following. This determinant of this 2x2 matrix equal to zero gave us this equation. The mu equal to plus minus square root of the AZ squared minus A AZ squared. And if I plot this, if I plot this curve, this curve is something like that. So that's the JP over JXY. This is the mu over JXY. So similar to what, yeah. So this side is a mock insulator, and this side is the computer. So this line, transition line, just is curved. And so this is actually and I finish our story using this marginal approach to study the phase transition. And in the next class, we'll using this marginal approach, but now treating this z1i, z2i, treating this z1i, z2i, z1i, z2i, z1i, z2i. Treating this z1i as a dynamic variable so they have a PD on this. And I try to derive a classical equation motion from this dynamic variable, this original parameter, making it dynamic. Then the fluctuation of the original parameter will tell us that excitation in the multi-insulator state and in the superfluid state, and in particular, near phase transition. So what we are going to do is that we'll study inside one insulator and try to approach the superfluid transition boundary. And we'll find, in this case, we can approach boundary here, because a quadratic discrimination and a gapless quadratic discrimination. We're approaching here with a gapless linear discrimination. There's a two different behavior. And there are some physics about this. But this would give us some more quantitative and more detailed understanding of what happening for this multi-system superfluid transition. Okay, I'll stop here.